Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Today, journalists from Los Angeles, Chicago, and Portland will join us to talk about how they're covering violent ICE raids conducted by armed agents wearing masks, the devastating toll these raids are having on communities of color, and how people are showing solidarity and fighting back. The Trump administration continues to say ICE agents are arresting and grabbing the, quote, worst of the worst. But the vast majority of the people they're arresting have no violent convictions, according to ICE's own data. Communities of color are living in a constant state of fear. Here is just one example. In June, ICE agents shoved and arrested 28-year-old Carrie Lopez Alvarado in Hawthorne, a city in southwestern Los Angeles County. Alvarado told agents she was a U.S. citizen. According to an October ProPublica report, more than 170 U.S. citizens have been held by immigration agents. They say they've been kicked, dragged, and detained for days. Carrie Lopez Alvarado had a baby girl just days after being detained. Here she is describing her experience with the CBS Evening News.
They told me, okay, your baby's gonna be born here, but you're from Mexico, right? And I told them, like, no, I was born here and I speak English.
Let her go, she's pregnant!
The 23-year-old LA native was handcuffed and detained for over 8 hours with a chain around her belly. Once she was released, she says she went straight to the hospital with cuts and bruises.
At the hospital, they had told me that I was already having contractions every 2 minutes.
So you were already in labor?
Yes.
Her boyfriend, who was inside the truck, was also detained and later deported to Guatemala. He has not seen his newborn. Michael Carrillo is representing Lopez Alvarado, seven other Americans, and one green card holder who have filed legal claims against the U.S. government, alleging they were wrongfully detained, racially profiled, and some were beaten by federal authorities.
What they're doing is they're stopping, detaining, arresting, putting people in federal custody, and then asking questions later.
Thanks to CBS Evening News for that clip. Trump has expanded ICE's brutal crackdowns to Charlotte, North Carolina, and is reportedly planning to send federal troops to New Orleans as soon as December 1st. Joining us to discuss what it's like and what it takes to cover these crackdowns and assaults are three journalists. Melissa Sanchez is an investigative reporter with ProPublica based in Chicago, where she covers immigration and labor. One of her latest pieces is about the Venezuelans who were detained and deported during a raid at their Chicago apartment building on September 30th. Melissa Sanchez has written about conditions at shelters for unaccompanied immigrant children. Some of her reporting, included in a ProPublica series, was a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize. Melissa Sanchez is the daughter of immigrants from Mexico and El Salvador. Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Zane Sparling is an award-winning journalist who has covered the Portland metro area for the past decade. He's covered protests and street battles in Portland since 2018. Zane Sparling is part of a team of reporters covering protests at ICE facilities. His latest pieces are about some of the cities in Oregon that are turning off license plate scanning cameras over ICE fears and a possible ICE detention facility in the works. Hi, Zane. Thank you so much for joining us.
Rose, thanks for having me.
And we're joined by Memo Torres, Director of Engagement and Multimedia Journalist for the James Beard Award-winning LA Taco, an independent media platform that celebrates Los Angeles. Memo Torres is also the host of The Daily Memo, where he recaps all ICE and Border Patrol raids in the Southern California area. Here is one of Memo Torres's recent reports. Actually, this is from yesterday.
Today, Border Patrol targeted Long Beach, storming the streets again, taking gardeners, old men, and a 12-pack of beers that they had. A child fled through a park in one instance, and a mother ran with her infant as her husband was taken by agents. Today's Thursday, November 20th, and it's day 168. We confirmed about 14 people kidnapped by mass federal agents today from all over, and at least 11 of them were from the Wilmington and Long Beach area. They started off in Gardena on Vermont and 149th around 8 a.m., where agents took one poor person shortly after dropping off their child at school. From there, they were all over Long Beach questioning people at Magnolia and 10th, a young man on his bike on Anaheim and Caspian, and attempted to kidnap someone on Anaheim and St. Louis, but leaving empty-handed in all three of these incidents. They did chase a gardener into the Polly's Pies inside of the restaurant, where agents pinned him to the ground to handcuff him as Long Beach PD stood by watching. Border Patrol also took one person from Cherry's Donuts, two people at the U-Haul on Walnut and PCH, and one other person by the Farmers and Merchants Bank on Bellflower Boulevard. And over by 8th and Junipero, according to witnesses, Border Patrol chased a child through Rose Park before giving up and taking a gardener they saw nearby. In Wilmington, Border Patrol literally picked up an old man sitting by a liquor store who needed help getting up, making sure to put a handcuff on his hand first as he reached up for help. Also in Wilmington, at a bus stop in Anaheim and McDonald, agents grabbed two elderly men and their 12-pack of beers waiting for the bus. In Los Angeles, on Pico and Menlo early morning, a woman fled with her infant as agents grabbed her husband. The community came out, stayed with the distraught wife and her baby, and helped her get connected with lawyers. And by Chinatown, unidentified federal agents targeted an unhoused man named Manny, searching for him through tents before finding him with his wife. They threatened to tear down their tent if they didn't come out. Quote unquote, they didn't even give him a chance to put on a shirt, his wife told LA Taco. As agents were also spotted in San Bernardino on G in Virginia questioning a vehicle, in Corona at a Circle K parking lot, and in Fontana questioning another vehicle. And in the city of Bell, masked agents were spotted using the City Hall parking lot, something we've been seeing agents get more cozy with in the smaller cities. In La Habra, ICE apprehended a man on a bike. They were spotted also at the Riverside Courthouse, the Santa Maria Courthouse, the San Luis Obispo County Jail. And down in Chula Vista, one person was taken, leaving their red Prius abandoned. They were spotted also in El Cajon scouting a neighborhood. And down in San Diego, federal agents returned again to the 47th trolley station before being chased out by community members and their whistles and megaphones. Remember to stay safe and stay vigilant, folks.
That is Memo Torres, host of LA Taco's Daily Memo. He recaps ICE and Border Patrol raids in the Southern California area. And that is the report from just yesterday. Memo Torres was a finalist for the Ruben Salazar Award for Latino Journalists. Hi, Memo. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Well, it's an honor to have you. And it's incredible to watch your daily reports. It's just, there's so much activity happening over the course of 24 hours. How are you all obtaining this information?
It's a grind. Every single day we're tapped in with all the rapid response groups. We're lucky enough to have earned their trust. So, you know, I'm constantly in touch with them every single day as I'm getting reports fed in or they're getting reports. We're sharing the intel, we're verifying information together. It's really a community-led effort. And I'm happy and honored to be considered and be part of that community of rapid responders.
And LA Taco has such an interesting past, and you have an interesting past. I've listened to past interviews that you've given. You're a third generation landscaper, and you've said that when you were landscaping, you would take pictures of taco trucks, and then you started writing about the tacos and then started doing news coverage. And now so many people are turning to LA Taco to find out the latest on these crackdowns. Can you talk just a bit about how this all happened for you and how you all came to be doing this such important work?
Yeah, from landscaping to tacos to covering ICE. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting path. When LA Taco relaunched in 2018, it relaunched as a, you know, more of a news site, editorial. Before that, it was a blog.
And Memo, we're having a hard time hearing you. Can you maybe disconnect your headphones and use your phone speaker?
Give me a second.
We're speaking with Memo Torres of the award-winning LA Taco. He does the Daily Memo recapping ICE and Border Patrol raids. And there's so much activity happening in Southern California. Let's see if that's better.
All right. Can you hear me?
Oh, much
now?
Better. Yes. Thank you.
Perfect. No problem. I joined LA Taco in 2018 when it relaunched as a publication. Before that, it was a blog covering graffiti, tacos, and cannabis. And then one of my friends, Danny Hernandez, who is now the editor for the food section at LA Times, came from Vice Mexico to help relaunch it as a publication. That's when I joined, and I was like, well, I kind of like saw what they were doing, and I was like, well, I can help. I mean, I'm all over the city landscaping. I'm always eating tacos and a lot of these food spots, because one of the main coverages was food and tacos. And that's how I got started from there. I started writing about him, started taking pictures, started doing video. And then from there, the editorial team and our investigative reporter, Alexis Liberay, Javier Cabral, shout out to those guys. They kind of coached me along to reporting on other things. And I started kind of becoming more of a writer. And now we're here covering NICE.
And a couple days ago, you said that the raids in Southern California are actually increasing.
Yes. So it's really frustrating on my part to hear like folks not understand that they're still in Los Angeles. Our own mayor, Bass, had last week in three different separate occasions has said that, you know, there's only two or three raids that are not as bad. Yet in that period, like on Wednesday and it was Tuesday and Wednesday, I logged in more raids in those 2 days and more people kidnapped off the streets than I would do a month ago in a whole week. You know, we log in every week, the numbers, and we've gone from like 40, 50 kidnappings a week to now we're over 100 a week. And just yesterday alone, you could see the activity. Like it was just, you heard it on the Daily Memo.
100 a week.
Yeah.
And
we're at about.
Do you know why this is increasing? Have you been able to interview any government officials about this?
Well, we're in constant contact with DHS, with Trisha McLaughlin, you know, trying to verify incidents and all that stuff, but they don't explain why, but it's obvious. Border Patrol is out here, and, you know, one of the things I want to make clear is that, you know, people use ICE as a catch-all. ICE is doing targeted enforcement. They're going to looking for specific people that, you know, their asylum cases were dismissed, there's a problem with their court docs, their lawyers might have messed something up, or they just didn't follow up with something. They're targeting people specifically. Border Patrol are the ones doing the roaming raids. They're the ones just looking for people that are brown skin, in work clothes, look Latino. And they're picking anybody up. And they behave as if they have quotas. So something that we've seen here before is like, for weeks, they would go to try to target a Home Depot or car wash, which is their favorite targets. And the rapid response groups were on it and would know they were coming and alert the day laborers or the car washers, and then people would get to safety before they got there. Border Patrol agents would get so frustrated, they would just start going down the street and just pick up anybody they saw, anybody. Somebody on a bike, somebody at a bus stop, somebody just minding their own business at a corner, at a coffee shop. And now that's the new tactic. They're not really focusing on car washes and Home Depots as much as just swarming neighborhoods. They're going through and just swarming a neighborhood and literally just driving down the street and grabbing people left and right. And they detain them and then verify later. And like in almost every single instance, they drop somebody off down the street a mile or 2 miles down the road after they verify they're a citizen or they're a permanent resident.
Wow. That is Memo Torres. He is host of the Daily Memo with LA Taco. He recaps all ICE and Border Patrol raids on a almost daily basis. We're also joined by Melissa Sanchez, investigative reporter with ProPublica based in Chicago. Melissa, hearing what Memo said about what's happening in Southern California, are you hearing similarities about what's happening in Chicago? What are the similarities and what are the differences, if any?
Yeah, I mean, I think Memo's got a better ear to the ground in LA than I do here in Chicago. I haven't been doing as much of the day-to-day stuff, but from what I hear, it's very similar. When Border Patrol was here, and a lot of them have left, our Bovino has left. So things are a little bit less tense and scary for immigrants, but they were basically driving around looking for people who looked brown, who were gardening, who were doing the kinds of jobs that we know immigrants do. That was happening all over the city and the suburbs. I think, I mean, in addition here, we've had just some very spectacular kind of raids, which is the one that you had mentioned earlier that I'd written about.
Right, and we'll talk about that during today's show. I also wanted to mention that last week, the Chicago Tribune reported that 614 immigrants have been detained in Chicago, but only 16 have criminal histories that present a, quote, high public safety risk. And I'd love to ask all of you about reporting on this, because from ICE's own data, the overwhelming majority of the people who are being detained have no criminal history. But first, let's find out what's going on in Portland. Zane Sparling is an award-winning journalist who has been covering what's happening on the ground in Portland. Based on what you heard from Memo about what's happening in Southern California, Zane, what are the differences and similarities in Portland?
Yeah, and first, let me just say that that was a really impressive daily memo that I just listened to. As a journalist in Oregon, I'm not always as tapped in to the news in California and LA, and so. But clearly, Mr. Torres, that was a really impressive and detailed report. So, just wanted to say that was amazing.
Thank you.
And going on, so here in Oregon, right, the federal officials have reported about 560 immigration arrests last month. So it's a very difference in scale. Certainly we're having fewer. Oregon is a smaller state. That doesn't mean that there aren't huge impacts. Myself and my colleagues have reported about families that have been divided, people getting swept up and then released, but being essentially stranded. We had a great report recently about a situation where people were released from ICE custody in Mississippi, right? So thousands of miles away from Oregon.
Can you hold on that one? So people who are being swept up in Oregon are being sent to Mississippi?
Yeah, because Oregon is one of the few states that doesn't have an ICE detention center, right? We have a processing center where you can stay for about 24 hours, but after that, we have nowhere that the federal officials can send you. So they end up sending most people to Tacoma, which is about 2.5 hours away from Portland, right? So they're being sent to Washington, which of course is a huge hardship on its own for anyone who's trying to visit their family member. Immigration attorneys who might be based here in Portland, of course, are now needing to drive much, much out of their way to, see their client, represent their client in immigration court. And yeah, we've identified, not myself, it wasn't my story, but another really talented colleague named Yesenia Almaro has identified this case where the family was separated, and because they were transferred to various different detention facilities, they ended up eventually getting released in Mississippi. So yes, not anywhere near Oregon.
Wow. I mean, that's just incredible. We did a show many months ago about the crackdowns at the car washes in Los Angeles. And part of the problem is that families could not find their loved ones. They had no idea where they were taken. Is this still happening where people just don't know where their loved ones are being taken?
Yeah, we're hearing reports of that as well. Certainly there's some issues with people being arrested at the ICE facility. So not necessarily on an immigration charge, but for protesting or, allegedly breaking some law while protesting. And then again, federal officials are taking them to one of three or four different jails where they have relationships. One of those jails is here in Multnomah County in Portland, but there also are some, again, an hour outside of the city, and people are having trouble not knowing where their loved one has been taken and detained. So that's definitely ongoing.
Wow. And can you talk a bit more about this, Melissa? What you've been, you recently reported for the Chicago Reporter, El Nuevo Herald in Miami. You're now reporting for ProPublica. Can you talk about what it's like to try to get information from the Department of Homeland Security under the Trump administration, asking them basic questions like, where are you taking these people? Their family members have a right to know. What is it like to try to just get basic information?
I mean, it can feel like a joke sometimes, but to be clear, like, it's not that it was a ton better under past administrations. I have FOIAs out from, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago still with some of these agencies. Like, it's not like getting information from immigration agencies has always been tough. But right now, what Zane is saying is completely true. There's a guy right now I've been trying to track down, and ICE has this online locator where if you have the person's name or their A number, which is like the unique immigrant ID, you can find out where they are. But there's sometimes and very often they're not appearing in the ICE locator as in a particular jail. They're just appearing as if they're in ICE custody. And so I get calls from families in Venezuela constantly, like, did my husband get deported? Where is he? Why isn't it showing up anymore? And it's really hard. This one man in particular I'm thinking about, I did reach out to ICE. I'm like, oh, by the way, like, where is this guy? I got a call from a friend of a friend that he might be in some jail in Louisiana, but he's not showing up at any of the places that I'm looking, and I have yet to hear a response. I learn where people are because somebody who has zero money in their account is able to tell a cellmate to please get a message out to his wife, to tell her to find me and send me a WhatsApp message. And then by the time I'm able to track them down and put money in their accounts to call me, they have been transferred to some other facility. Like right now, over the course of the, you know, the 25 minutes we've been on this call, I just missed a few calls from a new jail number I haven't seen before. So it's incredibly difficult. And often when you reach out to ICE, whether it's about like, where is somebody, or why did you do this raid, or did you find any goods at, and what was the outcome? Their response is like a statement that they have provided to everybody else that doesn't respond to any of your questions. And that's sort of what they're doing these days.
I mean, it sounds like you could spend so much time trying to track down one person and just trying to figure out what happened when they were detained. So given that so much is happening so fast, Melissa, how are you and your colleagues at ProPublica deciding on what to cover and where to spend your time?
Yeah, it's really hard, I think, because we have to kind of make a choice, and it's a, like a bit of a bet and like a resource bet. So when we decide to go into something, it's going to be a lot of people and time and money that we spend. In this particular case, you know, there was one of the most high profile and aggressive immigration raids to be conducted in a U.S. city in recent memory, happened here in the early morning hours of September 30th. And when it happened, I was wrapping up an unrelated story. A few days passed. There was a lot of local and national media attention. And kind of, you know, a week and a half later, like after all of that, my editors were like, maybe we should go back and look at that raid. And a lot of us met and were like, what are we going to bring to this? Is it worth it? And we had to decide, you know, this was super consequential. There's very little information about it. We have like a unique position where we can invest serious like reporting muscle into trying to understand like, how did this raid take place? Who was affected? Like what did they get out of it? Because very little of that information was out. And so we decided to do it knowing that it would take us a month or so. We work pretty slow at ProPublica, and a month is very fast for us. Mm-hmm. And we ultimately put five reporters on this story. And I happen to live here in Chicago. I could drive there. One of my colleagues lives in Chicago too. So that made it easier for us to decide to do that. And I mean, and ultimately we were able to report information that had not been reported despite all the local and national media attention to it. We were able to track down and interview a lot of the immigrants who were affected. But it's hard because I was living, you know, I live in this city and Bovino was here, and there was so much media attention to all of these things, whether it was Bovino tracking down gardeners in, you know, nearby suburbs, or arresting families downtown in the Bean. It's really frustrating sometimes, like as a national reporter in an organization like ProPublica, when you can't cover the day to day. As I was listening to Memo's podcast earlier, like I feel like envy and just kind of some disappointment that I can't do the same, but we sort of have to pick and choose what we do. And that means fewer stories, but more depth, hopefully, with each one.
Right. And after a break, we'll talk more about the piece that you and your colleagues wrote, I Lost Everything. Venezuelans were rounded up in a dramatic midnight raid, but never charged with a crime. And so many people were horrified when they saw these agents rappelling from a helicopter to raid an apartment complex. The government said it was filled with gang members. You and your colleagues found little to support the claims. Federal officials declined to release the names of 37 immigrants detained in the raid. You've identified 21 of them and spoken with a dozen. And these were the voices that were really missing from a lot of the media coverage. So we'll talk about that after a break. Melissa Sanchez is an investigative reporter with ProPublica based in Chicago. Zane Sparling is an award-winning journalist. He has been reporting in Oregon, in Portland, on the ICE detention protests that have happened there. He's been reporting there for more than a decade. Memo Torres is director of engagement and a multimedia journalist for the James Beard Award-winning LA Taco. He's host of the Daily Memo, where he recaps ICE and Border Patrol raids. If you have any questions for our guest today about how they are covering these violent ICE raids, we'd love to hear from you. And then if you have any overall thoughts about the media coverage that you're seeing, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we're speaking with journalists from Los Angeles, Chicago, and Portland to talk about how they are covering violent ICE raids conducted by armed agents wearing masks. If you have any questions for today's guests about how they are doing this work, or if you have comments about media coverage of these raids, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Melissa Sanchez, an investigative reporter with ProPublica based in Chicago. Zane Sparling is an award-winning journalist for The Oregonian. Memo Torres is director of engagement, multimedia journalist, and host of the Daily Memo for the award-winning LA Taco. Melissa, we were talking about the raid in Chicago before the break. Can you first remind us, given that so much is happening, what happened on that night in September? A lot of people were so shocked to see agents rappelling from a helicopter to raid this apartment complex. And there was some coverage, and I'll play a clip in a minute. There was some coverage of some of the people who were speaking out, but I don't remember seeing the faces or much of the coverage of the Venezuelans that you all ended up interviewing.
Yeah, so this raid involved 300 or so agents from the Border Patrol, the FBI, ATF, ICE, who knows who else. The government claimed that they had information that there were guns, explosives, drugs, and Tren de Aragua gang members. That's the Venezuelan gang that has become the boogeyman for this administration. All that stuff was inside the building. And so they went in, and a lot of the coverage that you saw was because they not only took out every immigrant and detained them and sent them to jail or did things with them. They also zip-tied and held for a couple of hours a few dozen U.S. citizens. And those people were eventually released, and we heard a lot about that. And the raid took place in this five-story apartment building in a neighborhood of Chicago called South Shore. It's like a fairly low-income Black neighborhood south of downtown. So it's not the kind of place where you might have seen some, you know, immediate immigration type protests. Like, it's not a neighborhood known for immigrants, but a lot of the more recent arrivals from Venezuela had wound up in that neighborhood because the rent was cheap. But that's the setting of this place. And what made the scene so dramatic was you had a helicopter, you had these armored vehicles, you had drones flying around, and you had all of these heavily armed agents with masks, with flash grenades, with all sorts of tools. A lot of the folks we talked to, Venezuelan and African American, told us that they use different kind of comparison points, that it was like Grand Theft Auto, that it was like they were looking for Saddam Hussein, that it was like they were looking for El Chapo Guzman. Like, it was like they were looking for some huge, crazy, like, criminal, when at the end of the day, like, that's not at all what it appears that they found.
And then the Department of Homeland Security put their own slick video of this together, right?
I mean, that's what made it. That's why we all know about it. Not only that, they invited the cable TV channel News Nation to have a crew out there filming it. And so the Department of Homeland Security tweeted out and posted all sorts of cool videos of agents rappelling off the helicopter, like looking very strong and using night vision to pound down doors and detain brown-skinned men, with their hands zip tied behind their backs. And there's the video that really got me was they had these kids, because they're like these skinny, early 20-something, like young guys. They have zip tied. It's like 1 in the morning. They'd just gotten back from work and they were sleeping. So they're like exhausted looking, pressed against a wall, like interrogating them, like lifting up their shirts, like, oh, like what's that tattoo? Like, are you Yarawa? And you can hear all these Border Patrol agents ask this. And there was one kid who they were questioning. The only one in the videos that you can hear him say his name. His name's Johnny Caicedo. He gives his date of birth. And I think they ask him whether he likes Michael Jordan, which is an interesting reference point, because Michael Jordan and Nike, there's like the Air Jordan logo. Those are the kinds of things that U.S. law enforcement thinks is related to Tren de Aragua, which isn't exactly true. But I ended up talking to this kid later. I saw him in immigration court. He was deported, like very quietly, without any cameras afterward. And during the immigration court process, like the government attorneys like made no reference to gang affiliation, made no reference to a criminal record. They just got him out of the country quickly, and he was never charged criminally with anything. And when I talked to him about what happened, he's back in Venezuela. He was so angry, and he said, and he pointed out the cameras to me. He's like, I saw the cameras. I thought they were there to document the ICE abuse. He did not realize until later, after he had left detention and had been deported, that they were there to kind of make heroes of the Border Patrol agents that had conducted this raid.
Well, let's play a clip. This is some of the people who live in that apartment building describing what happened. This clip is from Now This Impact.
I was out there crying when I seen the little girl come around the corner, because they was bringing the kids out too, had them zip tied to each other.
They just treated us like we were nothing.
Patricia Fisher said she came out to the hallway of her apartment complex on the corner of 75th and South Shore Drive in her nightgown around 10 Monday night, only to find ICE agents yelling police.
It was scary because I've never had a gun put in my face. They asked my name and my date of birth and asked me, did I have any warrants? And I told them no, I didn't.
She says she was then handcuffed and released around 3 a.m. Fisher says she was told if anyone had any kind of warrant out for them, even if it was unrelated to immigration, they would not be released. Citizen app video shows the chaotic scene overnight. Neighbors tell us there were dozens of ICE agents. Neighbors like Ebony Watson says they ducked for cover as they heard several flashbangs go off.
They was terrified. The kids was crying. People were screaming. They looked very distraught. I was out there crying when I seen the little girl come around the corner, because they was bringing the kids out too, had them zip tied to each other. That's all I kept asking. Where's the morality? Where's the human? One of them literally laughed. He was standing right here. He said, them kids.
Watson says budget trucks and military-style vans were used to separate parents from their children. Other neighbors say they saw agents destroying property to get in the building.
And they had a big 15-inch chainsaw with a round blade on it, cutting this fence down. We're under siege. We're being invaded by our own military.
Thanks to that clip from Now This, Melissa Sanchez spoke with a dozen Venezuelan men and women who were detained. Norelle Eugenia Mejias Caceres, 37, said she collapsed and passed out in a hallway as heavily armed agents took away her husband and her barefoot 6-year-old son. Johandri Jose Andre Jimenez, 23, said his 3 little girls, all in diapers, wailed when agents threw him against the floor. A 20-year-old said she pleaded with agents to stop hitting a Venezuelan man she knew. There are children here, she said repeatedly, worried about her 4-year-old son who was watching. I mean, this is just so devastating. Memo, if you can jump in here and talk about how this is affecting people in such a violent way. And can you talk about the importance of really focusing on the individuals who've been affected and really how hard that is, because so much is moving so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that this administration is doing is dehumanizing
what they're doing on the people. Every DHS response is that this was a criminal, illegal alien, right? Three just aggressive words to label these people, not as humans, not as fathers, not as gardeners, not as workers, but as, you know, something abstract. And yeah, I mean, people are literally living in fear, like you said at the beginning. I mean, I think I've had these conversations with restaurants, with car washes, with jornaleros, the day laborers, and they're living in fear. They're afraid to go out there. People are traumatized left and right. And I mean, we haven't even discussed people that have died in detention center from being arrested here. I mean,
yes. I'm so glad you brought that up. Like, can you talk about that?
Yeah, one of the first deaths this year alone, because Adelanto facility is a notorious detention center here in California. They've had multiple deaths throughout the years, but this year we've already had two. We reported on the first two. The first one was Ismael Uribe Ayala. I got to speak with the brother and the mother of him. He worked at a car wash. He was brought here to the U.S. when he was 4 years old. He was a DACA recipient, lost his DACA status because of a DUI. He got arrested at one of those roaming raids at a car wash. He was a manager at a car wash for 15 years. The community knew him. He was beloved there. He ended up at the Adelanto Detention Center. And about 2 weeks in, the mom said that, like, he would go, and he started looking bad. He would be like, "Mijo, please go get some medical attention." And he said, like, "They don't want to give me anything. They don't think I'm sick." She came back the next Saturday, and that he was like, his eyes were red, he was white, he was shaking. She's like, "Please get some medical attention." He's like, "Mom, they don't want to give me anything." And then she said that the last time she spoke with him, he just told her, "Mom, I can't anymore," in Spanish. I can't do this anymore. Mm. So that's, they were going to plan on Monday to speak with lawyers to see what they could do. On Sunday, he got rushed to the Victorville Hospital, where he died. She got a call from San Bernardino police in the morning, a visit, to let them know that her son had died. Mm. And he had an abscess in his left butt cheek that went out of control and eventually killed him. Mm. We just had another one, Gabriel Garcia Aviles, if I remember that correctly. Sorry, I have so many names in my head and they get jumbled up. He's a grandfather, an older man. He got picked up, and he got picked up, I think, October 14th, and he was... The family was trying to contact him, and they kept telling him that he was at Adelanto. They wouldn't answer the call. They stopped answering the call. They called about 200 times. And finally, they got a call back and to let them know that he actually was, in fact, not at Adelanto. He had also been sent to this hospital, and he had been there for 10 days. And when they went to go visit him, he was basically, when he was detained, he got checked into Adelanto and then immediately sent to Victorville Hospital. When they got there, they found him with broken teeth, bleeding from his skull, bruising all over his chest, some damaged ribs. And they saw, and he passed away. They got to see him before he passed away. He was intubated. He had a tube going down his throat. But they noticed that, like, when they walked outside, there was plenty, like, there was several other gentlemen that were shackled to beds also in that. So the abuses these people are facing at the detention centers is horrific. The lack of medical attention they're getting. It's really horrifying. And these people are living through these traumatic experiences. And they, you know, when the family get, like, you know, I think Melissa was talking about this earlier, and Zane was talking about this earlier. People are literally getting disappeared. You know, right now there's about at least three people that were detained in the last couple of days that nobody can find them. They don't show up in the system. If they're lucky to find them, it's because they get a lawyer to help them, and they might find them like the next day or a couple of days afterwards. Like, these are really horrific situations, and all of these family members, they shot a U.S. citizen in Ontario because he was trying to warn ICE as ICE had pulled over three individuals in a car as he was going to work. He stopped, pulled back to let them know, "Hey, this is a school bus stop, and the kids are on their way." The ICE agent freaked out and shot him in the shoulder. He fled, called 911. His wife took him to the hospital. HSI showed up at the hospital, picked him up before he could get into the emergency room, took him to detention center overnight, was released on Halloween night, still with the bullet in his shoulder. And to this day, he still has that bullet in his shoulder.
Wow.
I mean, there's horrific incident, traumatized incident after traumatized incident that people are going through. And it's not just the people being detained. It's people that are just like, you know, civilians, citizens, people that are observing. Like, it's, I mean, I could go on and on and on the coverage. I mean, I think I've looked at over 2,000 raids, and they're all in my head right now.
Oof. And it's just, I mean, it's so violent. It's so traumatizing to even watch these videos. I'd love to ask all of you, and we're getting a few emails from listeners, given that things are happening so fast, what do you think is missing in the coverage? And it's very interesting because sometimes it's easy to forget what is coverage and what is just a video that someone took. Because I noticed that in the Chicago suburbs, and these were pretty wealthy neighborhoods, so many people came out on the streets when the ICE trucks showed up, these unmarked trucks, I should say, and then ICE agents getting out. And they started yelling at these guys saying, "You're not welcome here, get out." And people would take videos. So what would you all say is missing from some of the coverage based on what you've seen and some of the reporting that you and your colleagues have done? What do people need to know given that so much is happening so quickly? What are your thoughts on this, Zane? And again, you're an award-winning journalist with The Oregonian.
Well, here in Oregon, Rose, what's missing is the war. We don't have a war going on here in Portland, Oregon, and we've had lots of excitement here over the last 3 or 4 months, given the comments from President Trump more recently, where he decided there was a war in Portland and tried to send the National Guard, spurring a long court fight that's ongoing. In terms of other things that are missing from the coverage, I know that we're always trying to tell people's stories and to make sense, right, of viral footage. Certainly, a lot of people get their news from social media, where video is prioritized, and those videos often lack context. And certainly, some people are watching those videos with feelings of shock and horror, and others are watching them with glee. It depends on your politics. And so that type of content, where it can even be dismissed as just sort of entertainment, right? Riot entertainment here in Portland, where you see a crowd of people protesting something and then there's a fight, or the federal officers are using crowd control munitions. I mean, those stories, of course, are worth telling and reporting on, but it also, we at The Oregonian really tried to take a step back as well and make sure that we're not just capturing sensational moments, but really accurately telling our readers what's happening.
Yeah, I actually want to just quickly let listeners know about a story that's so important that your colleagues have been reporting on. This is about Jackie Merlos, a Portland resident who was detained in Washington for 4 months. Originally from Honduras, she has a pending visa which allows victims of crime to legally remain in the country. She has 4 children. And they were being taken care of by family friends. And she was finally released on October 27th. And she spoke with The Oregonian about what it was like in detention. Here is Jackie Merlos speaking to The Oregonian.
So, you know, I was living day by day, just praying, God, please make this day short. I don't want to be here anymore, you know. We couldn't see the light of the day or the night. But the food was so bad. Pancakes uncooked, the rice uncooked. One day my kids cried for like 2 hours nonstop. And, you know, I had to be for them and hug them and say, no, they cannot take you guys away from me. I'm the mom. They were asking me over and over to sign my deportation to Honduras. And I say, no, I have a lawyer. You guys cannot make me sign because I have a status in USA. And they were calling me criminal. And now I had to, you know, confront the life by myself. And they are telling me every night, Mom, we miss Dad so bad, you know. Why Dad is in Honduras? I'm glad that we have you here, Mom, but we miss Daddy. We were a happy family, you know. We were hanging together, you know, going to the park and doing all these nice things together. And now Daddy is gone, you know. I am one of the cases, or thousands of cases, that have been going through all of this, you know, and people are so afraid to talk. I'm not afraid to talk. I don't get it when Trump say, make America great again. He's devastating families.
That is Jackie Merlos speaking to The Oregonian after being reunited with her 4 children. But as you heard there, her husband has been deported. That's the other part of this there's so much devastation here, Melissa. So many families have been separated because people have either been deported, or I'm seeing so many videos of people saying, I am self-deporting because I do not want to go into an ICE detention center.
Yeah, and I actually wrote about that earlier this year. The Trump has reconfigured an app that used to be for people to make appointments to go to the border, the CBP One app, into an app that helps you self-deport and get some government assistance to get out of the country. And I talked to a lot of Venezuelans in Chicago and across the country who wanted to leave the country. A lot of women whose husbands have been deported and who have small kids and can't survive on their own anymore and who are homeless or on the brink of homelessness and were trying to self-deport, but they couldn't, even using the app, because part of it is like the lack of diplomatic relations that we have with Venezuela makes it difficult for them to return, especially if they don't have Venezuelan passports, which a lot of them don't, because that country is not working very well. It's a big mess. I've even talked to families who have gone to ICE to try to just get themselves deported. And ICE tells them, oh, you signed up for the app. Sorry, you have to wait. And like months and months later, they're still here. It's like even, it's kind of absurd. I do wanna just take this second to clarify something I heard in the audio earlier about the Chicago raid. A lot of people have said that children were zip tied during that raid. And I just wanna take this opportunity to say that none of the Venezuelans that we spoke to said that is true.
Huh, that's interesting. Okay, because that also got a lot of headlines. Zip tying children.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where that came from. Clearly, some neighbors said that was the case, but none of the Venezuelans whose children were detained and were put in jail in family detention facilities, none of them said the kids were zip tied.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for that information. That is Melissa Sanchez, investigative reporter with ProPublica, based in Chicago. Zane Sparling is an award-winning journalist for The Oregonian. Memo Torres is director of engagement, multimedia journalist, and host of The Daily Memo for the James Beard Award-winning LA Taco. We have a number of questions from listeners. I'll just read some of these, and then you can take whichever one you'd like. Is there a registry being created to help reporters and families locate missing persons? Can attorneys general in California, Oregon, Washington do anything to help stop these abuses of human rights by enforcing constitutional rights in state constitutions against this abuse? What can listeners do to help stop these horrendous attacks on innocent people? Do you want to take one of those, Memo? What are your thoughts?
I'll take the one about the what can people do. It's really simple, and what we've seen in Los Angeles has been proven very effective. Is joining a community watch group or rapid response group or starting one in your own neighborhood. It doesn't really take much. A lot of the rapid response groups started just with one or two people. All it takes is talking to your neighbors, getting a big group chat, your local businesses, and then connecting with a local immigration organization. CHIRLA is a national one. They do a lot of great work. They're one of the main ones. And at the very least, document. Alert people when you see ICE agents in the neighborhood with megaphones and whistles. You can, if there is a, you've witnessed somebody getting taken, record it. Try to get information, the name of the person, and a phone number for them to call, and their birthday. And just try to document these incidents. These videos, all this documentation really does help in court cases. It really does help, whether it be for an attorney general or ACLU or the public counsel or anybody who's bringing a lawsuit or court case against ICE or Border Patrol. These videos help in all those situations, or somebody who's being wrongly accused or been wrongly detained or civil rights violations. And document that and share that with CHIRLA. That is extremely important. Something as simple as that is something you can do, and it's really easy to do.
Memo Torres is director of engagement, a multimedia journalist, and host of The Daily Memo for the James Beard Award-winning LA Taco. Zane, what would you add?
Yeah, well, I'd like to just talk a little bit about attorneys general, right? So in Oregon, the attorney general is Dan Rayfield, and he has certainly been outspoken in his opposition to ICE and other immigration enforcement tactics, things that are happening specifically here in Oregon. And again, Rayfield is often joining with many other states in these lawsuits, right? But they have sued to stop the use of SNAP or food stamp data for immigration enforcement. They have sued to prevent DACA recipients losing some of that healthcare access they are getting here in Oregon and in other states. Rayfield has also been, of course, heavily battling Trump's plan to deploy the National Guard here in Portland. And one that's very interesting is that, right, Oregon, like California and other states, has a sanctuary law, right, saying that this is a state that is not going to assist with federal immigration enforcement. And some of the local county sheriffs have actually sued Oregon saying, well, okay, we understand that we're a sanctuary state, but doesn't federal law trump state law? And what happens if someone files a public records request? If ICE files that request, do we have to grant it because we would grant this request for someone else? Rayfield, who's the attorney general in Oregon, is saying, no, there's no confusion here. The reality being that Oregon sanctuary law does require compliance with, say, like a warrant, a judicial warrant that a judge signs, but that otherwise the sheriffs are not supposed to be cooperating with ICE. So there's a lot going on at the state level, trying to push back against what's happening on the federal level.
Zane Sparling is an award-winning journalist with The Oregonian. And your final thoughts, Melissa?
I mean, everything that both of them said is perfect. I think the only thing I would add is support your local journalists, whether that's by subscribing to The Oregonian, donating to LA Taco, to ProPublica, to wherever, you know, the LA Times. I think we need more readers and we need support to do this work. And if you have information about unlawful or egregious activities of ICE or any other agency, like, find a reporter you trust and get them that information. And know that we're all really swamped right now. So be concise, send us an email, try to explain in bullet points quickly what's going on, and we will do our best.
Melissa Sanchez is an investigative reporter with ProPublica based in Chicago. Memo, Zane, and Melissa, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe
and
today.
You can find a number of the articles that we mentioned on today's show at kalw.org. Click news and your call. And if you have any thoughts about how you'd like us to continue covering ICE and these violent raids, please email us yourcall@kalw.org. Thanks to Nina Kissinger for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.